Spiegel and Holmes.
Okay, here we go, sports fans.
Afternoons on the Score.
Operation Woo King Tuck got emboldened.
Oh, dear God.
The Woo people are out.
Yeah, that's really pleasant.
As he did 120 seconds with Elise Menneker on Marquee, he showed some personal attachment to Chicago and the Cubs thing.
Favorite dinner spot?
The Vets. I end up going there a bunch.
Come on now. That is a unique place to Chicago. It's not the Olive Garden or someplace you can go.
I mean, take yesterday, for example. We were out at the Olive Garden for dinner, which was lovely. And I happened to look over at a certain point during the meal and see a waitress taking an order, and I found myself wondering what color her underpants might be.
There's nothing wrong with the Olive Garden.
All right, well, it's not a Red Lobster.
There's
okay?
Nothing wrong with Red Lobster now.
Look, let's get something to eat. There's a Red Lobster nearby. My treat.
Maybe some other time.
Okay, well, I'll be at the Red Lobster in case you change your mind, Shooter.
I'm just saying, it's not a chain where he could go in another city. This is, are
you saying that there are no steakhouses of that quality in New York City and Boston?
All right, they might have places with a vintage ambiance and dim lighting and a classic decor that creates a cozy and sophisticated atmosphere. They might also have places like that.
They might also have places where, when you're there, you're family.
Why is a corporate steakhouse so good? I want it to be dark. I want shellfish towers. I want bosses trying to impress their new hires. I want new hires trying to impress their bosses. That's what I love, and I want it to have more than one location. I want to know that the exact same thing is happening in Dallas, in Chicago, in New York, in Miami. I want consistency. I want a menu designed in a boardroom by suits. I want every location to be the same. I want to know that the sriracha vinaigrette at the Poke Bowl is the same everywhere I go. And then I don't have some artist chef going to ruin my favorite dish because he thinks he's special. You're not.
The official adventures of
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons 2 to 6 on 670 The Score.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. It is the Spiegel and Holmes show. Full boat for you today. We've got a lot of cool stuff happening on the show. In fact, we're going to give away a bunch of stuff. We're going to give away Black Keys tickets. We're giving away a pair of tickets to see the Black Keys No Rain, No Flowers tour with special guest Gary Clark Jr. September 3rd at the Huntington Bank Pavilion at Northerly Island. Tickets are available via Live Nation if you don't win them. But when we tell you to be the sixth caller for those tickets, you need to remember this number, 312-540-0670. Everyone is ready. The host of categories, Alex Kuhn, is here.
Is he ready, though?
He wasn't ready before the show, which was a little shocking.
That's why I brought it up. He was like, yeah, no, I'm good. I just don't have a third category yet. It was like, you know.
I've got a third category now, and I want to say thank you to the committee for allowing me to return as host and to clear up the doping scandal.
Yeah.
It was a cream that I was using,
it
was in the cream, and I had no idea that the banned substance was actually banned.
It turns out there was not just a doping scandal, but also some money under the table. You were like SMU.
That's
still
happening, though, right? You're still laundering money through categories,
well,
right?
You're not going to deny that. In the NIL era, it's now legal,
it's a good point.
We're all good now.
There's some smelling salts things that are going on there.
Oh, I forgot.
There's all sorts of stuff.
I bought my own. We're good.
If you bring your own, you're fine.
He actually went looking for smelling salts today because I wanted us to try smelling salts on the air as a wacky radio bit. But they don't sell them at CVS. What the hell, man?
We could have just gotten some sort of ammonia.
Yeah, just straight up ammonia.
I mean, that's basically what it is,
right? You ever smell smelling salts?
Yes.
Yeah, me too.
Cover football for a long time.
Oh, yeah, because so people had them and they were like, here you go. You want to try them? Is that how it went down for you?
Hey,
what
Holmes.
Your child get ammonia?
Hey, Holmes, come here. Ah! You know, that sort of thing happens.
Reporters weren't stealing them on the sidelines?
No, you didn't have to steal them because they were there, like, on the field.
Mm.
Like, guys would use them and toss them, and they would just be there on the field. So,
hey, Lawrence, come here. Smell these.
Yep.
Got it. My Nana used to have them in her purse just in case she fell asleep at synagogue.
Oh.
True story. And so once the Spiegel kids caught wind of this.
Yeah, that was before the rules changes at the synagogue, though. Now it's a lot more up-tempo, faster for the younger audience.
Yeah, she's got to bring her own.
Theo changed the synagogue.
They are not providing them.
But, you know, so once the Spiegel kids caught wind that there were smelling salts in Nana's purse, they made their way down the aisle at the synagogue. And all of us were like, here, no, you smell this. No, I don't want to. I said smell this. And I had to. And that's when I smelled smelling salts for the first time.
It's pretty rotten.
Yeah, it's bad.
So Alex is here. Tanny is here. That man is Matt Spiegel.
Hello.
Him. Along with giving away Black Keys tickets, we are also going to give away a chance to see our show at the Budweiser Brickhouse in Wrigleyville on Tuesday, August 19th. So here's the thing about that. We're going to be hosting from 10 until 2 that day. Yeah. And that's because Nico Horner is going to join us at noon. So we were like, oh, well, our guy Nico's going to be there. And the midday show was nice enough to show swap, which we do every now and again. So we will be at the Budweiser Brickhouse on Tuesday, August 19th. And we will let you know how you can win those as well. Cubs on Deck is powered by Verizon, the most reliable 5G in Chicago. Visit your local Verizon store today.
A day off for the Cubs today. They remain four back of Milwaukee because the Brewers don't lose. Like Parker Lewis.
They what are they, 70 lose. And 44 now?
Something ridiculous. Here's what I know. They're adding an Andrew Vaughn t-shirt to the promotional giveaways in Milwaukee. He's been there for 10 minutes.
And it would have, what they're choosing to do would have played better on the south side of Chicago.
King Vaughn.
Yes, as in King Vaughn. From O Block on the south side. So it would have, had he been good, it would have been a great play on words for the White Sox to use. But apparently someone in Milwaukee is a fan of King Von.
I guess so.
That's a cool idea for them to use. But it would have.
Good for them.
Had he been good on the south side, it would have been an easy marketing move to call him King Vaughn instead of King Vaughn.
Let me check my notes. Andrew Vaughn, not good on the south side. Just check those notes to be sure.
Great in Milwaukee, though.
Unbelievable!
On an 11-game hit streak now?
They're just ridiculous. They had a big home run last night. They're really good. They don't lose, and so that makes things difficult. But so, because we processed a lot of Cubs things yesterday post-game, and they're off today. And we have John Paul Morosi later on and some other stuff that we're going to get to in baseball. Today's a nice opportunity to lead with a football conversation we've been having in the hallways.
Yeah, and that's the idea of watching this thing take shape and watching the quarterback take shape and understanding. Like, when Ben Johnson is hired because of what happened in Detroit, I feel like there's like, well, things are automatically going to be poof, pow, like they're going to be great. And there's two things that I want people to keep in mind while working through some of this stuff. One of them is he's never been a head coach before. So there could be some limitations to how things start off. I imagine, and everything that I've been told about the way that he is running things up there leads me to believe that he at least has gotten off on the right foot as a head coach. The other thing is that you're kind of asking Caleb Williams to start over again. And he's starting over with new voices in his head and in his helmet. So it might not immediately work. And that doesn't mean that it isn't going to work.
I don't know that we've ever seen it successfully completed, what we are hopefully seeing right now.
That's a good point.
The installation of an offense with a talented young quarterback where it hopefully reaches a point that you're like, yep, this thing is going to work and they're going to be together for a bunch of years here. We didn't really have that with Mitch Trubisky and Matt Nagy, and we've never really had it. Like, and this is going to be an interesting process. Like, I'm extremely optimistic about what Caleb Williams can do and can be. And that's going to be tested. If anybody else out there is optimistic about Caleb, it's going to be tested by a lot of fits and starts and learning moments and bumpy roads as he gets there and problematic competition that's really good and, you know, good football players that make plays and all kinds of things. But, like, I don't know if this town is really prepared as a football populace to deal with what this is going to be. Maybe especially because of the modern polar nature of sports conversation. because the violent shift from one day to the next of I'm freaked out. I'm not freaked out. It's going to be good. I think it might be bad. I don't know. It's like, this is a process, man. This is a process. And we've, like, to me, like, we got to ramp forward holding on to your feelings about it without getting violently pushed in one direction or the other by practices and, frankly, by preseason games.
And honestly, regular season games at the beginning of this.
That's why some of this is even a conversation for, like, opening day and opening week of the football season, and we'll have it. Like, this is going to be bumpy for a while. Do you think our sports fandom, and are you, dear listener, ready for all of what this is, which is to stay level as you build here?
I hope that things are good immediately. That would be great if they were. I think it would be folly to believe that that's the case, that this might take a little bit more time. Although we are seeing Ben feel more comfortable with doing some of the creative play calling in practices, which to me is a sign of, hey, they're learning some stuff, so now I can add some stuff on top of that.
Yeah.
Like that to me is a good sign. But I,
because there's bad signs about the public not being ready, isn't there? There's some bad signs out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of those.
This massive cry for Tyson Bagent already?
I mean, that's filled with all sorts of landmines in it. Like the idea, I'll say to the listener what I said to you yesterday.
He's the real deal. This is coming from a pure bloodline.
Well, there's that part of it. and there's definitely a contingent of people they want him to.
Somebody said the Bajan's coming from a pure athletic bloodline.
Yeah,
was that
caller
about it?
To the Mully and Hall show last year.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's a whole thing. My whole thing is, if Tyson Bagent is your quarterback for any long stretch of time, it's a disaster. And I'm not trying to take a shot at Tyson Bagent. It's just that if he is the quarterback, then that means that you have lost development time with Caleb Williams as he would be entering into year three of his deal. So you wouldn't quite know exactly what he is going into the third year. The other thing is while I have a lot of there's a lot of joy in the Tyson Bagent story.
Oh, for sure. Like, it's a good story.
It's a great story.
You found a backup. You found a what seemingly is a useful backup. Okay, great. But like this idea that you should scrap a quarterback who had 3,600 yards last year and under 10 interceptions with nothing around him as you're trying to build something here. It's like, it's insane to me that we're seeing so much of that. So that to me is a bad sign in terms of what our Chicago football Bears fan can handle. It's going to look bad. There's going to be times where Caleb looks bad and you're like, all right, well, good. Hopefully you learn something from that.
Yeah,
next.
It'll be interesting to see how they slot the quarterbacks. Like if they say that at the end of this, if it is Bagent or Keenum as the number two, and I don't know if they'll even take that into account, but that's something that I'm interested in on the depth chart. Now I feel like Case was brought here to be the number three, to do the hand holding, to be the extra coach in the times when the coaches can't talk with the quarterback, all of that stuff. But with Tyson Bagent, I feel like this is just me, and he's not asking me for advice. I feel like it'd be better for Tyson Bagent if he went someplace else, because he's not going to get the opportunity here. And the opportunity of just kind of being, you know, I guess like the people's champion or to a certain segment's people's champion versus there are actual places where I could see Tyson Bagent winning a job. It's not here.
See, that's interesting. I disagree. I think if I were Tyson Bagent's agent, the Tyson Bagent agent, I would want to be here, and I'd want to learn under a really great offensive coach, and I'd want to have the cover for a little while as I learn, and then maybe you play one game, and then you sign the deal like you're Matt Flynn. You know what I mean? Like you're something like that, where you get a chance eventually, but you learn under the good thing. But
I'm Tyson Bagent, I want to play.
Yeah,
and Caleb was very durable last year. He played all 17 games.
if I'm him, I want to show that I can play. And I think that there is a world there in a world. I think there is a world where he's quarterback 40. If you were like putting together a list, he's quarterback 40.
Are they better off going with Tyson Bagent there?
No.
When did Schefter say that?
That was when we were in Vegas, I believe. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, it's just
it was the whole idea
after the Patriots game.
It was the idea of sitting Caleb down because things are going too fast for him, and then of course you realize that Caleb had to learn how to play NFL quarterback by himself.
I mean, it's just insane. The kid was the number one pick overall, was incredibly talented, and put up the numbers that he did last year, and now he gets to learn from maybe the best, one of the absolute best that's out there. What a tremendous opportunity for the Bears to have, and a tremendous opportunity for us to watch and get smarter. See, it's interesting. A texter says this about the Bears fans, as we've been asking, like, if they can handle the conversation. And the process, he says, we want to see football that looks like other football teams we watch when we're watching football. I know that feeling of watching an Island game on a Monday or a Thursday or a Sunday and coming in and saying, man, that just doesn't look like what we do. But when do you want to see that? When do you want to see that? And that's why this is partially an opening day conversation, opening week conversation. Like, I'd like to see that on the regular by like late October. Like, I'm not going to freak out. In September, I'm not going to freak out if it's bumpy. I'm not going to freak out if I see some good stuff in the first week of October and some bad stuff in the second. Like, and I mean, you tell me, Lawrence, is that an like, what do you think about drawing that line of like when to expect to see it?
A lot of people that, you know, 2 weeks ago said the next 12 weeks are going to be interesting, and that puts us at the end of October, the beginning of November. Like, that makes sense to me that you look and you see, all right, kind of where we're at and where we need to go. But I also don't want to use that as like a demarcation line that he's not good. Because in my world, I look at this as a redo of his rookie year. And I think Ben Johnson does too, from what he said about the lack of experience under Eberflus and Shane Waldron. So it's a very strange place for me to be, because a lot of people know how I felt about the draft last year. I want to see him be given every opportunity to succeed. And we are just now, like, think of it this way. We're just now at the point where we have an idea that he is now in good hands.
That's the thing. We are at the beginning of something. We're at the very, very beginning of the relationship and the growth and the learning.
Yeah.
So, look, I'm feeling extremely optimistic about the possibilities here, and I'm going to pledge to hold on to that as I learn things and watch. It doesn't mean I'm not going to be critical or analytical, and I'm not going to be pie in the sky delusional. It doesn't have to be these polar opposites that American discourse and American sports discourse has descended to. You don't have to do that. You don't have to take part in that. Even if you can actually be open-minded and watch the process unfold along with us. You can do it.
The process itself, but it's tied into a lot of stuff. Like, it's tied into wanting to be better than the Packers, and it's tied into,
yes, it is,
not having a playoff team with any legitimate chance for a long time. So
I get it.
I understand the emotional impact of being told what you were told about Caleb and then not seeing it play out immediately.
Yep.
And now, like, you have me saying, guys, last year is pretty good considering, and we all, like, that's the other part, like the cognitive dissonance of, like, everyone knows that he was put in a terrible position last year.
But you're right. There was a lot of it last year, and there will be some this year of, like, you told me it was going to be this, and now it's the other. So it becomes personal and vitriolic in that way. And that's part of the nature of what we do, obviously. I just, like, it's enough for me to be excited about the process and watch this process.
Well, then why don't we hear more about this process? Caleb's doing something that he hasn't really done in his career, And it got us to thinking about something that we heard on this very show about that development. We'll share with you next here on The Score.
I haven't seen a whole lot of stumbling blocks in terms of the under center work. It's for some guys, it feels like a fish out of water, but I have not felt that from him.
Ben Johnson talking about the changes in mechanics for Caleb Williams. He's now taking a lot of snaps under center.
And that is a big deal for the offense that Ben Johnson wants to run, and it's a big bit of learning for Caleb. And part of what's given me this kind of wave of optimism, you saw it hit me yesterday, Lawrence, as we listened to some of this tape, which was Caleb with Stacy Dales and Brian Baldinger on the NFL Network about his work under center so far in camp.
I actually enjoy being under center because it one, it messes with the defense, and then two, it gives me more ability to take a couple shots.
Yeah,
well, which is always fun. Yeah. So you draw the defense in, we run the ball well, and that starts up front. It also starts with me and my communication and getting the guys going and my cadence and things like that. But you know, the guys up front, it always starts with them. It's always going to end with them. And so getting off the ball, showing like it's run. Like, everything looks the same. Everything looks like it's a run, mm-hmm. play action. Everything looks like run, keeper. Everything looks like run. It is a run. Mm-hmm. So now you're getting these big plays and tiring the defense out and doing all these different things, and it's like, oh, now you got a shot and you take it. And you know, when you don't have the shot, protect the football, take your checkdowns, and move on to the
I feel like in this league last year, okay, we saw so much too high shell across the league.
Yeah.
It was hard to take shots.
Yep.
Like they were taking it away from you, but the way that you get them out of it is to run it.
Run the ball.
You run them out of it.
Yep.
You know, so I always think, you know, DeAndre, Rashawn, like these guys, they don't mind being 8 yards deep and taking it like that. Rather than just being a point of entry back in shotgun situations.
Yeah. No, they've been great.
So it's him understanding why and realizing what he can get out of it and like being excited about the whole process and digging it. I love his understanding and the quickness with which his brain is starting to work on this stuff.
Well, we hope that that's the case. Him being a willing participant is a big deal. We don't know if it works yet. Right?
Like, well, we know it works for a good functioning offense.
Right. But we don't know if he is comfortable in it yet.
No, we don't.
Because he hasn't been in peril yet.
Mm-hmm.
It made us think of a conversation that we had last year, and it was great. And actually, our next guest hooked this conversation up. Dave Wanstead and Troy Aikman go back a ways. And Troy Aikman, when he was on the show with us during football season last year, he talked about how an under center quarterback and play action can help make a quarterback better.
I think there's a tendency for a lot of quarterbacks, they don't think so much about just avoiding the sack, avoiding the negative play. I do think that part of it is, and this again is not just Caleb, it's across the league what I see. And it's one of the reasons why last Monday night when I called the Bengals-Cowboys game, you know, Joe Burrow, he may not be the best quarterback in the league, but he's my favorite quarterback in the league. And he throws with anticipation better than anybody in the game. And so these quarterbacks come into the league today. They want to see receivers come out of their breaks. They're a little methodical in the pocket, so everything's kind of slowed down. It puts offensive linemen, which everyone will tell you, it's hard to develop offensive linemen. They're just simply not coming into the NFL. So now you take a position that's not being developed in college, the offensive line, and you put a quarterback behind him who's got this false sense of timing and is hanging on to the football, and they're taking a lot of sacks, which is essentially killing drives. The drives are over for the most part. When you take one of these sacks, I think the way that you speed a quarterback up, and I say this from experience because, you know, you mentioned North Turner, and when he came to Dallas, from day one until the last practice that he coached me 3 years later, every day he said, get out of there, meaning get the ball from the center and drop back as quickly as you can. And we didn't run shotgun. And so I believe when you watch the 49ers or you watch the Green Bay Packers or even the Minnesota Vikings this week, they all come from this Mike Shanahan tree. And with that, there's a lot of under center. And then that tends to speed up the quarterback, and it speeds up the timing, so the ball's coming out, as opposed to just standing back there in shotgun, because it's hard to develop a timing from the shotgun formation, and quarterbacks are sitting back there just holding on to it as if there's not a pass rush. And I just don't think it's winning football, and that's why I'm really bullish on that offensive system from the Mike Shanahan tree that we see across the league, with a number of offenses that are having a great deal of success.
How about it? So I don't think it's winning football. And so this is what Caleb has to do. And he happens to have a coach who demands it and teaches it well.
I agree with 90% of what Troy said. I also think if you look at who the winning teams were in the NFL last year, there's plenty of them where the quarterback is in shotgun. You know,
all the time?
Yeah, not all the time, but Lamar's in shotgun a lot.
Jalen Hurts was in shotgun a lot.
Josh Allen is in shotgun a lot. Patrick Mahomes is in shotgun a lot. You can look up the percentages, but I think that there
that's
can
what
be,
I was doing.
There can
that?
Be a mix of all of this stuff. I don't think it has to be one way or the other. But for the system that Caleb's going to run, yeah, Jared Goff had incredible success being under center and then using that to his advantage because, one, Detroit decided you have to marry this to a run game concept that's going to work or at least going to show that you are willing to run it. And Caleb recognized that, him saying us making all of this stuff make same stuff look different and different stuff look the same. Like, that plays a role in it, too. The blanket statement of that you can't win football games that way or it's not winning football, I find that to be a little too strong.
Let me say this then. Why do you hate Troy Aikman? And, you know.
Because he looks like Jay-Z.
He does look like Jay-Z. Does Jay-Z have a beer? As Troy does.
No, he's got like a champagne or something.
I bet he does. So, but Troy's got a beer. And he and Joe Buck do beer commercials together for Troy's Beer.
Oh.
I'm promoting that thing.
Yeah, I got the hat. I still got the hat. I should wear that.
It's a nice hat.
It is a nice hat. But I gotta tell you, Tanny, as a hat connoisseur, and I know I don't wear a lot of caps on this show.
You really don't.
I should, because I have like 60 of them. I don't like the bar on the brim of the cap.
On the front of it? On the outside of it?
No, I'm total Kyle Shanahan. It gets cut the bar off.
Yeah.
You know?
The hat can speak on its own. It doesn't need that decoration on it. The guy who hooked up that interview with us is Dave Wanstead. He was at camp. He has been at camp, and we have got to talk to him about camp next here on The Score.